The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
There's some kind of trouble at Stack Island. Apparently personnel are missing, believe lost at sea. We're to join the search. All right, we're going down.
Who are you?
Chief Stivers. And you are the missing Corporal Meharry? Where's Commander Bakarian?
She's dead, sir.
You had something to tell us?
Yes, sir. Commander Bakarian was one of Lepescu's followers.
Admiral Lepescu was using prisoners as prey. He was part of a secret society that held manhunts. They used human ears as recognition symbols.
Commander Bakarian's not in our offices, sir. The commander's not answering any call and the locator's not lit.
Ready to initiate bubble bath.
But, sir...
Did you earn your ears, Sergeant?
Yes, sir.
Then hop to it.
They've got the orbital station. Bonartag picked up convicts from Stack 3 with its LACs and armed them. Use them as shock troops.
I'm a weapons specialist. I was on my way to Stack 2 to consult on the progress of some of their research. I happen to know that there are weapons under development there which you do not want the mutineers to have. If I were you, I'd figure out a way to send some troops out there to secure the base.
But we have no weather data, which is going to make it hard to fly from one base to another.
Commander, I'm telling you, if you don't secure that base and keep the mutiny from getting hold of those weapons, you'll wish you had to the end of your life.
There's something you must know.
Yes, sir?
You know the official history of the regular space service, how it is an amalgam of the private space-going militias of the founding families? The family we served was based on a single planet. That planet was Altiplano, your world. And, Esme Suiza, it's clear that your ancestors earned the enmity of mine by rebelling against their patrons and slaughtering them all.
What?
I don't believe it. I love her, and I admire her, and I'm going to marry her if I have to leave the family to do it.
There's been a mutiny on Copper Mountain. All leaves canceled. All personnel returned to their ships at once.
Nothing lasts forever.
I hope so.
Let's go.
Serrano Legacy, Book 6, Change of Command, Part 2. From Graphic Audio.
And now, for our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents...
Yeah, I reckon we waltzed right into a heap of trouble again.
What's the matter, old-timer? Don't you like having a target painted on your back?
William W. Johnstone's...
Yeehaw!
Narrated by Ken Jackson. With performances by Tim Carlin, Mort Shelby, Tim Getman, Sherry Simpson, Elliot Dash, Thomas Penny... Terrence Aselford, Christopher Graybill, David Coyne, Andy Clements, Richard Rowan, Dolores King Williams, Jonathan Watkins, James Konacek, Tony Nam, and Johan Detweiler. Sidewinders 2, Massacre at Whiskey Flats.
Sounds like a ruckus brewing out there.
Bo Creel tried to ignore his trail partner's comment, as well as the elbow that Scratch Morton prodded insistently into his side. The two Texans had spent a long, hot, dusty day in the saddle, and all Bo wanted to concentrate on at the moment was the cold beer in front of him on the bar. Condensation ran down the sides of the mug to form a puddle on the hardwood. It was a moment of delicious anticipation. But then, someone in the street outside shouted,
"Somebody find a bucket of tar and some feathers!"
Bo was an easygoing hombre, but some things stuck in his craw. Tarring and feathering some luckless bastard was one of them.
You think we ought to go see what's going on?
Might as well. You won't be satisfied till we do.
Bo cast a look of regret over his shoulder at that mug of cold beer, even as he turned toward the bat-winged entrance of the Buffalo Bar. The Texans walked side by side, a pair of tough frontiersmen who had wandered the west from the Rio Grande to the Milk River, from the Mississippi to the Pacific Coast, for nigh on to 40 years now. They had first met as youngsters, back when their homeland was still part of Mexico, and General Santa Anna's army had sent the Texican settlers fleeing in the great exodus known as the Runaway Scrape, in those dark days after the fall of the Alamo. Bo's father and Scratch's pa had both been members of Sam Houston's ragtag army, and the newfound friends had run away to join up too, arriving just in time to swap lead with the Mexicans during the Battle of San Jacinto, the clash that had won freedom for Texas and Texans. Scratch had saved Bo's life that day, the first time among many that each of them had risked his hide for the other, and they had been best friends ever since. Through tragedy and triumph, they had ridden together, and even though they never went looking for trouble, the acrid scent of powder smoke always seemed to follow them. They were both tall, muscular men, but that was where the resemblance ended. Scratch's hair had turned silver at an early age, but he was still handsome, with a ready grin that the ladies found quite appealing. He was something of a dandy, too, sporting a cream-colored Stetson and a fringed buckskin jacket over whipcord trousers tucked into high-topped boots. An elaborately tooled leather gun belt was strapped around his waist, and in its holsters rode twin, long-barreled Remington revolvers with ivory grips on their handles. Where Scratch had a touch of flamboyance about him, Bo was more restrained and sober, in a dusty black suit with a long coat that made him look a little like a reverend. He wore a white shirt and a string tie, and his flat-crowned black hat rested on thick brown hair with gray threaded through it. Bo carried only one gun, a Colt 45 with well-worn walnut grips. The faces of both men had been weathered by the long years of wandering, tanned by countless desert suns and seamed by the frigid winds of the high country, living maps of the frontier and all its harsh beauty. Their deep-set eyes, framed by perpetual squints, had witnessed just about everything there was to witness. So as they pushed past the curious customers in the Buffalo Bar who had congregated at the entrance and front windows of the saloon, slapped aside the bat wings, and stepped out onto the boardwalk, Bo and Scratch didn't see anything they hadn't seen before. An angry mob of more than a dozen men clustered in the street, shoving their hapless victim back and forth as they jeered and taunted him about what they were fixing to do to him. In the fading light of day, Bo and Scratch saw that the man was young, no more than 25 or so. He wore a dark suit and a black hat. His duds were fancier and more expensive than Bo's similar outfit. As one of the members of the mob gave him a hard shove, his hat fell off, revealing a shock of blonde hair. He looked scared, Bo thought. As well he might be. The man who was bellowing was the biggest one in the crowd, with powerful slab-muscled shoulders and a prominent gut.
"Here comes Ralston. Did you get it?"
The man called to the four or five men who approached the scene in the middle of the street. One of them waved something in the air.
"Here's a couple of my wife's feather pillows, and Duncan's got a bucket of tar. That'll fix that four-flusher up mighty fine."
"What'd your wife say about you taking them pillows, Ralston? Or did you sneak them out without her knowing?"
"Damn it! I have you know I wear the pants in my family."
"Leave it alone. We got more important things to deal with, like teaching this no-good swindler a lesson he'll never forget."
"Now, Mr. Harding, there's no need for this to get out of hand.
I'm sure if you just let me explain, you'll see that this is all just a big misunderstanding.
Misunderstanding? Hell! You tried to chip everybody around here out of what they got coming to them. You'll be sorry you ever set foot in these parts, mister.
It looked to Bo like the gent was already sorry, as well as scared for his life. Most of the time, men who were tarred and feathered survived the painful, humiliating experience. But sometimes they died of the burns inflicted by the hot tar. It was one step short of a lynching, but potentially just as fatal. Quite a few of the townspeople had gathered on the boardwalks to watch the grim scene being played out in the street. Bo looked over at one of them, a balding man who wore a storekeeper's apron. The man had a frown of disapproval on his face.
Who's the fellow with the big belly?
You mean the one running the show? Like he runs everything else around here?
Uh-huh.
That's Tom Harding. Owns the biggest ranch in these parts, as well as having his fingers in half a dozen businesses here in town.
Big skookum he-wolf, is he?
He thinks he is, anyway. And I reckon he is. He's got some tough hombres working for him, so most folks just go along with whatever he wants. Simpler that way.
And less dangerous.
We're just common folks, mister. Not gun hands.
What about the law? Don't you have a marshal?
That's him with the pillars. Marshal Ed Ralston. He hadn't seen the outside of Harding's hip pocket since Harding got him appointed to the job.
Bo and Scratch glanced at each other in the fading light. If they took a hand in this game, they would be going up against not only a wealthy, powerful rancher who fancied himself the lord of his own little kingdom, but also the official forces of law and order, corrupt though they might be. But it wouldn't be the first time they had gotten crosswise with the law. In their travels, they had always been more concerned with doing what was right, rather than what was necessarily legal.
What do you think, Bo?
I think it's time we put a stop to this.
Are you fellas loco? Going up against Tom Harding is a good way to get yourselves killed. Not only that, but that hombre they're gonna tar and feather really is a crook. He tried to swindle the whole town.
Then he ought to be dealt with legally.
Bo took a step down from the boardwalk into the street and started toward the mob. He didn't have to look around to make sure that Scratch was with him. He knew that his trail partner would be there. A couple of Harding's men had grabbed hold of the swindler's arms. He writhed in their grasp and tried desperately to pull free, even though it was obvious he couldn't escape from the ring of angry men that encircled him. Another man approached him carrying a bucket from which tendrils of steam rose. The bucket contained hot tar, ready to be dumped on the luckless victim.
Hold it!
Oh, I've learned my lesson, Mr. Harding. I surely have.
Strip him first, then put the tar on him.
That's enough.
Everyone froze for a second, from Tom Harding to the man who struggled in the grip of Harding's cronies. Then the rancher turned to glare at Bo and Scratch, who stood about 10 feet away, apparently as casual as if they'd been out just enjoying the evening air.
What the hell did you say, mister?
I said that's enough. Let that man go.
I think you're mixed up, hombre. I give the orders around here.
The way I understand it, you're not the law. He is. If this man has committed a crime, he ought to be arrested and held in jail for trial.
The circuit judge isn't due here for 3 weeks yet. We're just saving him some work. We can take care of things like this ourselves. Isn't that right, Marshal?
That's right. You fellas are strangers here. You just better go on your way.
I'm afraid we can't do that. We'll ride out, but we're taking that man with us.
Do you know who I am, you old son of a bitch?
I reckon I do. You're a big bag of hot air just aching to be popped.
Jenkins! Thomas! Show these old geezers what happens when somebody butts into my business.
Two hard-faced, gun-hung hombres stepped forward from the mob.
You want us to kill him, boss?
Of course not. Just bust them up so they hurt for the next week.
Our pleasure, Mr. Harding. Nothing I like better than beating on some sanctimonious old fart.
The two men advanced on Bo and Scratch, while the rest of the mob looked on in rapt attention. The townspeople on the boardwalks watched nervously, too.
This ain't right, Harding.
Shut up, Gus. Don't forget the bank I own half an interest in still has a lien on your store.
The merchant grimaced, but didn't say anything else. The two hard cases were almost within reach of Bo and Scratch now.
Say your prayers, old-timers.
Jenkins lunged at Bo and swung a fist at the Texan's head. But Bo suddenly wasn't there anymore. and the punch whipped harmlessly through the empty air where he'd been. As Bo's opponent stumbled forward, thrown off balance by the missed blow, Bo hooked a hard left into the man's gut. The hard case doubled over. That put him in perfect position for the roundhouse right that Bo brought around and crashed into his jaw. At the same time, the other man tried to grapple with Scratch, only to find himself sailing through the air as Scratch grabbed his arm, twisted around in a sharp pivot, and flung the man over his hip.
An old engine taught me that move nigh on 30 years ago. Engines love to wrestle.
The man Bo had belted in the jaw had collapsed too, but now he started to surge back to his feet, clawing at his gun.
I'll kill you for that, you old buzzard.
Bo's hand seemed to flicker faster than the eye could follow as he brushed aside the long black coat and palmed the Colt from its simple black holster. The hardcase's gun hadn't finished clearing leather when he found himself staring down the muzzle of Bo's .45.
Better let it go, son. I'd purely hate to have to kill you, because then your amigos would probably try to kill me, and there'd be guns going off all up and down this street, and innocent folks might get hurt. But you'd never know about that, because you'd already be dead.
The gunman stared at Bo's Colt in disbelief that he had been outdrawn. A muscle in the man's jaw twitched as he warred against the impulse to complete his draw. He had to know that if he did that, he would die, plain and simple. After a second, his fingers opened and allowed his revolver to slide back down into its holster.
Now take it easy, old timer. That gun's liable to go off.
Not unless I wanted to.
Scratch unlimbered his Remingtons just in case. A fighting light gleamed in his eyes. He grinned directly at Tom Harding, and the message was obvious. If any shooting started, Scratch aimed to ventilate the cattle baron first and foremost.
What the hell? That crook's gone!
What? Gone, you say?
It was true. The young, fair-haired swindler was nowhere to be seen. He had slipped away while the brief ruckus and the near gunfight had everyone distracted. Like a rat, the varmint had slipped away in the gathering darkness. No telling where he was now, but in all likelihood, he was putting as much distance as he could between himself and this settlement.
Looks like we don't have any reason to fight anymore. If you'd locked that gen up like you should have to start with, Harding, he'd still be here. Now he's long gone.
Thanks to you two, I ought
But
to...
you won't.
Scratch shifted the barrels of his Remingtons significantly.
I got a dozen men here. I give the word, you'll both be shot to pieces.
Yes, but it'll be the last word you'll give.
Boss?
Get back to the ranch. Now!
Bo could tell that those lean, hard-faced gun wolves didn't want to go, but they slowly turned away and headed for their horses, which were tied at hitch rails along the street. Marshal Ralston and the other townies who had been part of the mob started to disperse as well. Harding was the last to go.
You better get out of this town, old-timers. You'll be sorry if you don't.
Yeah, well, mister, we're already sorry we stopped here. It's a plumb unfriendly place.
You don't know how unfriendly.
Harding stalked off, jerking the reins of a chestnut free and swinging up into the saddle. It was a big horse. It had to be in order to carry a man of Harding's bulk. Bo and Scratch didn't holster their guns until the street was empty again.
Are we lighting a shuck like Harding said?
Not until I get that beer, or another one, rather. I expect the first one's warm by now.
Buy you that beer, fellas. It's been a long time since anybody around here stood up to Tom Harding. Quite a show.
You sure you want to risk being seen associating with us? Sounds like Harding's got a hold over you.
His bank's got a lien on my store, but I'm no fool. He can't call the note in early. I made sure of that before I signed it. Come on.
The merchant, whose name was Gus Hobart, bought beers for all three of them and joined the Texans at a table in the corner.
I admire your gumption, fellas, but it might be better if you moseyed on. Having to back down like that is going to stick in Harding's craw. There's no telling what he might do.
Well, we ain't made a habit of running from trouble.
On the other hand, sometimes there's some truth to that old saying about discretion being the better part of valor. Curious, though. What'd that young fella do to nearly get himself tarred and feathered?
That's the worst of it. You boys were risking your hides for somebody who didn't deserve it. He came damn close to making off with a fortune that rightfully belongs to folks around here. You see, the railroad's talking about building a spur line up here from the main route down south.
Ah, the railroad.
Beau understood perfectly well that although the coming of the Iron Horse had done a lot to help with the civilizing of the West, it was also responsible for a great deal of violence and chicanery in recent years.
Yeah, we've been hearing rumors about that spur for a while, and then that young fella showed up. Called himself Charles Wortham, but that was probably a lie, like everything else. He claimed to be working for the railroad and said he was here to arrange for the donation of land for the right-of-way. Folks had figured that the railroad would buy the land, but the way Wortham explained it, the only way they'd build the spur was if they could acquire the right-of-way free of charge. A trade-off, he called it. Folks around here would provide the land, and the railroad would provide the prosperity. So what we had to do was transfer the deeds to the property over to him, and then he would transfer it to the railroad in one big piece. So he said.
Nobody believed that line of bull, did they?
I'm afraid they did. We were that desperate for the railroad to come in.
Wortham would have sold that land to the railroad and made a killing. Then he'd disappear before anybody found out he'd acquired it by underhanded means.
Yeah, but he hadn't counted on Tom Harding having a friend in Santa Fe. Harding got this fella to look into the matter, and he found out that Wortham didn't work for the railroad at all. And as soon as Harding got the letter telling him that, he went after Wortham, grabbed him in his hotel room, got the deeds out of Wortham's carpet bag, and dragged him out in the street. I reckon you know the rest.
Good Lord. Sounds like we really did risk our necks for a skunk who didn't deserve it.
He didn't deserve to be tarred and feathered either. That could have killed him. A couple of years in prison would have been more appropriate.
Maybe so. I gotta admit, I felt a mite queasy myself at the idea of doing that to him. Nobody from around here, though, would have stood up to Tom Harding to stop it.
Any town south of here? It's been a while since we've been through these parts, but to the best of my recollection, there's not much until you hit Santa Fe.
No, that's not true. There are several settlements between here and there. Closest one is several days' ride, though.
You're not thinking of moving on, are you? We were going to stay here a few days and stock up on supplies, amongst other things.
That had been the plan, all right. Despite looking like a parson, Beau was a highly skilled poker player, and when the Texan's stake ran low, he could usually fatten it up in a few days just by sitting in on a few games. That was what he would have done here if fate hadn't intervened.
Well, we still have enough provisions to last us for a while, and we're not flat broke yet. Might be best if we moved on. Best for the town, that is. If Harding knows we're still here, he's liable to be like a bear with a hurt paw. He'll lash out at anything that comes near him.
Yeah, you're right. I was sure looking forward to sleeping in a real bed with a roof over my head again, though.
And we'll find us a nice, comfortable spot to camp tonight.
Uh-huh.
We're much obliged to you, Mr. Hobart.
I just wish we could be more hospitable to you fellas. You understand, though.
Sure.
Beau and Scratch stood up, nodded their farewells, and started toward the Batwings. The other men in the saloon nervously watched them leave.
It's like we got a dark cloud hanging over our heads and those gents are afraid it's going to rain all over them.
Yeah, you can't blame them for feeling that way. We're strangers, just passing through. But they have to live here and try to get along with Harding.
Beau and Scratch reacted instinctively as bullets sang past their heads. Scratch put one hand on the railing along the edge of the boardwalk and vaulted over it, rolling lively as he landed in the street. The silver-haired Texan came up on one knee with both hands filled with the butts of his Remingtons. Meanwhile, Beau crouched behind a bench that sat on the boardwalk. As the bushwhackers' guns continued to blare from the alley, slugs chewed splinters from the arms of the bench. One of the wooden slivers stung Beau's cheek as he lined up his Colt and squeezed the trigger. He had aimed just above one of the muzzle flashes, and as the revolver bucked against his palm, he saw another gout of flame from a gun barrel, only this one was aimed skyward as the man who pulled the trigger was driven over backward. Scratch opened fire too. Instead of the single precise shot that had come from Beau's gun, Scratch set both pistols to roaring in a thunderous volley of death. The second bushwhacker, even though he managed to get off another couple of rounds, never had a chance. On the boardwalk, Beau straightened from his crouch and walked toward the alley, advancing slowly and cautiously with the Colt thrust out in front of him, ready to fire again if need be. No more shots came from the alley mouth. When Beau reached the end of the boardwalk, he fished a lucifer out of his coat pocket with his left hand and snapped it into life with his thumbnail. The harsh flare of light from the match revealed two men lying motionless on the dirt, their rough range clothes splotched with spreading bloodstains. Bo recognized both men. So did Scratch, who had holstered one gun and was using that hand to slap dust off his clothes as he came closer.
That's the same two varmints who tried to hand us a beating earlier.
Yeah, Jenkins and Thomas, I think Harding called them.
You reckon he sent them back to kill us?
Could be. Or they might have come after us on their own, since we showed them up. You can bet Harding would say he didn't know anything about them being here, if the law ever called him on it. But of course that won't happen, since the only law around here is Harding's tame star packer.
Both dead, ain't they?
Oh yeah, shot through and through.
Spreading blood was forming dark pools around both men. Bo shook the match out and dropped it as boot heels rang on the boardwalk, hurrying closer. He and Scratch swung around in case they were about to be attacked again. But instead of more bushwhackers, all they saw were curious townsmen drawn by the flurry of shots. The marshal, Ralston, was in the lead, carrying a lantern.
What in blazes happened here? My God! You murdered two of Mr. Harding's men!
Don't even think about trying that, Ralston. Those Texans had barely stepped outside when the shooting started, and the first shots came from the alley over here. They were just defending themselves, and there are a dozen men here who will swear to it.
You better watch what you're saying, Hobart. You're liable to wind up neck deep in trouble.
You know I'll go along with most anything Tom Harding wants. I'm no fool. But I'll be damned if I'll go along with these two men being railroaded for murder when all they were doing was defending themselves from Harding's hired killers.
You sure that's the way it was?
Damn sure.
Well then, I reckon I can't hold you two. But you're troublemakers, both of you. And I'm damn sure within my rights to tell you to get out of my town. Vamoose and don't come back.
Bo saw Scratch stiffening and knew that the marshal's words had put a burr under his partner's saddle. Bo put a restraining hand on Scratch's arm.
As a matter of fact, Marshal, we are just about to ride out.
We're still leaving?
That's right, we are.
And I'm sick of this place anyway. It's as unfriendly a burg as I've seen in all my born days.
You fellas take care. Keep an eye on your back trail, if you know what I mean.
Bo knew exactly what the storekeeper meant. Harding might not let this lie, even after the deaths of two of his men. That might make him even more determined to exact vengeance on the two drifters who had dared to defy him. But there was no point in borrowing trouble. Plenty of it came to a man naturally. The Texans untied the reins of their horses now from the hitch rail where they had left them upon arriving in the settlement.
I sure hate to take these big fellows back on the trail tonight. They deserve better.
Folks don't always get what they deserve, for good or bad. And I reckon that applies to horses, too.
They rode out, heading south. The main street of the town became a narrow road, little more than a path. A wagon could negotiate it, but the driver would have to be careful. The horses had no trouble following it, though. Around them rose the thickly timbered hills of northern New Mexico territory. The tang of pine and juniper and sage perfumed the air. Mountains loomed in the distance to both east and west, dark and mysterious in the night. What seemed like at least a million stars glittered in the heavens overhead, casting a silvery illumination over the landscape. A sliver of moon floated in the sky as well. It was a beautiful scene, although the sharp contrast between light and dark gave it a weird, otherworldly aspect as well.
You think Harding's gonna come after us?
No telling. He struck me as just arrogant enough and just mean enough to do pretty much anything.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I never did like that sort. Thinks he's better than everybody else and likes to be the big boss of everything.
You never did care for anybody who thought he was the boss. Reckon that's why you never spent much time working for wages.
I can say the same thing about you, Bo Creel. Neither one of us was cut out for toiling like regular folks.
Yeah, that's probably one good reason why we've wrapped up in our bedrolls hungry and without a roof over our heads so many nights.
And you wouldn't have had it any other way. You ain't fooling me.
I wouldn't even try. Not after all these years.
They rode on, and as usual, their keen frontiersman's senses were fully at work. Their eyes never stopped roving over the starlit landscape around them, and their ears were wide open for the sound of hoofbeats pursuing them. The night was quiet and peaceful, though, and the only sounds were the normal scurrying through the brush of nocturnal creatures, the swish of air as an owl swooped by in search of prey, on the faintly distant, long, drawn-out barking cry of a coyote. Tom Harding probably knew by now that the Texans had killed two of his men. The cattle baron no doubt had cronies in town who would have ridden out to his ranch immediately to deliver the news to him. If Harding intended to come after Bo and Scratch, though, it appeared he wasn't going to do it tonight. As for what the future would bring, there was no way of knowing, but the Texans would mosey across that bridge when they came to it. Right now, they were coming to a patch of shadow that was thrown across the trail by a stand of pines that crowded up alongside it. Bo kept an eye on that swath of darkness, knowing that it would be a good place for danger to lurk. Because of that alertness, he wasn't surprised when a man suddenly stepped out of the shadows into the trail, blocking their path as he lifted a long, sinister-looking object in his hands.
Now hold it, you two! Don't try anything funny, or I'll blow you right out of the saddle with this shotgun!
Bo knew that at this range, a double load of buckshot from a scattergun's twin barrels would shred him and Scratch into something resembling raw meat. That was why, under normal circumstances, he would have reacted very carefully to a threat like that. These weren't normal circumstances, though, and...
That's not a shotgun.
It damn sure is! And if you don't drop your guns and get down off those horses right now, you'll be sorry.
That's a broken branch of some sort, ain't it?
That's what it looks like to me.
I'm not fooling now. I'm warning you.
Give it up, son. It's not gonna work.
It's a nice try, though. It looks a little like a shotgun, I reckon. Well, in bad light. Yeah, if you hold your head just right, maybe tilt it and squint a mite.
Damn it!
The man flung down the thing in his hands, and it broke in two with a crack, confirming not only that it was a tree branch, but that it was rotten as well.
All right, go ahead and shoot me. I tried to hold you up and steal your goods and horses, so I guess I've got it coming to me.
We're not gonna shoot you. Come over here.
The man hesitated, then shrugged and walked closer to them. Bo had thought that he recognized the would-be robber, but now he was sure of it. The man's dark suit and hat and fair hair revealed his identity. His voice was even a little familiar from the pleading he had done back in the settlement.
We're the fellas that saved you from that mob, you know.
Son of a bitch, it is him! What are you doing out here, mister?
What do you think? Trying to stay as far ahead of those crazy bastards as I can. Don't want anything to do with hot tar and chicken feathers.
They might not bother with that next time.
And they might just take you straight to the nearest hanging tree.
There's not going to be a next time. I've learned my lesson. I follow the straight and narrow from now on.
Sure. That's why you pretended to have a shotgun and threatened to kill us with it unless we gave you our horses.
Well, you can't blame a gent for trying.
Actually, you can. You can even shoot him.
I didn't actually do anything. You said it yourself. That's not even a real shotgun.
Son, even if it had been, I don't reckon we would have been in all that much danger. What's your name?
My name is Charles Wortham. I work for
Don't even try that. We heard all about it back in town.
Oh, my name is really Jake Riley.
Are we supposed to believe that?
Well, as it happens, it's true.
You tried to cheat those folks back there.
I would have gotten away with it, too. That is, if Harding hadn't had to go and ruin everything.
Don't you even feel the least bit ashamed?
Let me tell you something. Something that everybody in my line of work knows. Every single person on the face of the earth has at least a little bit of larceny in his or her soul. That's what you have to appeal to if you want to make the schemes work. A man who wants to get something for nothing is the easiest to cheat.
But those folks back yonder weren't trying to get something for nothing. They just wanted the railroad to come to their town.
So they could get rich. Everybody who handed over a deed to me would never have done it if he hadn't believed that he'd make a lot more money in the long run by doing it.
We can go round and round all night arguing about this, and it won't accomplish a blame thing. Are you coming or not? If you are, climb up here behind me.
You asking the likes of him to ride with us?
I won't leave any man afoot. Not even a swindler and con artist like our friend Jake here.
Yeah, well, he ain't my friend, and I think you're loco for not leaving him here.
Wouldn't be the first time you thought I was loco, would it?
Well, not hardly.
I'm surely obliged to you for the ride, Mr.
Creel. Bo Creel. My partner is Scratch Morton.
I'm sure pleased to meet you both. It's going to be a mighty long walk to the next town.
We won't get there tonight. We'll have to find a place to make camp before too much longer. I wouldn't mind putting a few more miles between us and that settlement, though.
You and me both, brother. You and me both.
What happened to your horse? I reckon you did have a horse.
I sure did. A fine little mare. She's back there in the livery stable, though. A livery stable co-owned by Tom Harding, I might add. So I don't think I'll be going back to get her.
Not unless you want to risk a dose of tar and feathers again.
How about a gun?
I had a pocket pistol. They took it away from me when they stormed into my hotel room, the barbarians.
So you don't have a thing?
Clothes on my back. And my charm.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you can make a fresh start in the next town we come to. You can probably get a job in a store or a livery stable or some such.
Does that look like a hand that should be loading flour sacks or mucking out stalls? If you'd stake me to a dollar or two, Mr. Creel, and let me find a poker game in some saloon, I'll run that up to plenty of money in no time.
By cheating? And call me Bo.
I don't have to cheat. I can take these yokels for plenty just by playing fair and square. Of course, if I need to shade the odds a little.
A damn tin horn. You got a blasted card sharp riding with us, Bo.
Afraid he's gonna get us into trouble? It seems to have a way of finding us anyway.
Yeah, well, maybe so, but that ain't no reason to give it a helping hand.
You don't need to get in any poker games, Jake. Some good honest labor will get you back on your feet again.
I thought you just dressed like a sky pilot. I didn't know you were going to start preaching at me, or I might not have accepted that ride.
I'll let you get down right now if you want.
No, there's no need for that. We'll talk about what I'm going to do once we get where we're going. For a couple saddle tramps, you two sure are full of advice about how a fella ought to live.
Yeah, I know where you can go live.
A few minutes later, Bo swung the dun off the trail and onto an even narrower path that led upward through the trees. Scratch followed, and a minute later, they came out into a small clearing, just as Bo had expected.
This'll do.
Not much light penetrated into the clearing, since it was surrounded by tall pines, but the Texans had good enough eyes, despite their age, to let them see what they were doing as they unsaddled the horses.
Look around and find us some firewood, Jake.
Look around? How can I look around? I can't see a blasted thing.
Sure you can. Just relax and wait a minute. Open your eyes. Don't squeeze them half shut like you would if you were in some smoky saloon.
I wish I was.
After a few moments, Riley began moving around the clearing and bending over to pick up broken branches small enough to use as firewood.
Careful you don't grab a shotgun by mistake.
A few minutes later, Bo had a tiny fire burning inside a circle of rocks he had carefully arranged so that they threw back the heat from the dancing flames.
You can't cook anything with a fire that small.
Hide and watch.
And you don't have to eat if you don't want to.
Now, I didn't say that.
Bo fried bacon, made some fresh gravy with the grease, and heated biscuits left over from that morning's breakfast. Simple fare, but good and filling. Riley pitched in and ate his share. A little more than his share, maybe. When the meal was over, and the cleaning up had been done, and the flames were burning down to redly glowing embers, Bo and Scratch walked over to check on the horses, leaving Riley slumped on a log by the fire.
We're gonna have to stay and watch all night to keep that young coyote from running off with our horses and all our gear. I wouldn't put it past him to murder us in our sleep.
I don't think he's quite that bad. And we'd be standing guard anyway, in case Harden and his men come after us.
Which we wouldn't have to be worrying about if we hadn't stepped in to give Riley a hand.
What's done is done. Now we make the best of it.
We could cut him loose, let him fend for himself.
It may come to that, but I reckon we can afford to see how the hand plays out.
By the time the Texans came back to the fire, Riley had slumped down off the log, stretched out on the ground, and was sound asleep.
I'll stand first watch.
Bo nodded. It didn't really matter who took the first turn and who took the second. Both men were accustomed to making do with a minimal amount of sleep when they had to. Contrary to Scratch's worries, the night passed peacefully. Riley didn't budge from his spot beside the log, and he slept like a log, too. Nor was there any sign of Tom Harding and his men. As the sky lightened with the approach of dawn, Bo hoped that Harding had decided losing two of his gun wolves was enough. Bo had bacon frying and coffee boiling by the time the savory smells woke Riley. The young man sat up and ran his fingers through his tousled blonde hair.
Ooh, that sure smells good.
Bo used a piece of leather to protect his hand as he picked up the coffee pot and filled an extra tin cup he had taken from his saddlebags. He held it out to Riley, who took it gratefully. Scratch slipped into camp with a Winchester tucked under his arm. He had gone down to have a look a few minutes earlier.
Trail down below looks clear.
I got to wondering about something. Are there any Indians around here?
Hostiles, you mean?
That's right.
Not to speak of. Most of the Indian trouble now comes from the Apaches, over in Arizona territory.
Yeah, come to think of it, though, there are still a few bands of renegade Apaches in the mountains over west of here. They come out to raid every now and then.
Do you think we'll run into any of them?
It's not likely.
But if we do, you do not want to let them take you prisoner. They can keep a poor devil alive for days whilst they have their fun torturing him.
When the breakfast was finished, Bo and Scratch cleaned up the camp. Riley helped, grudgingly. Then they saddled the horses and rode back down the hill to the main trail, Riley once again behind Bo on the dun's back. The three men continued south, and around mid-morning they stopped briefly.
Here, Riley, why don't you ride with me for a while? It ain't that I'm all that fond of you, mister, but it ain't fair to Bo's horse to make him carry all the time.
Doesn't matter to me. As long as I'm not walking, I don't care who I ride with.
This was magnificent country through which they rode. Up ahead, a rugged slope littered with huge boulders loomed to the left of the trail. A mountain goat bounded from rock to rock with almost supernatural grace and agility. Pretty though the scene might be, Bo was eyeing the slope with a wary frown.
Somebody up ahead of us.
Bo lowered his eyes to the trail and saw a lone man riding in the same direction they were.
That fella ought to turn around and come back. I don't like the looks of those rocks up there. I can see a little dust, like they're trying to shift.
At that moment, one of the boulders broke free of its precarious perch. It began to roll down the slope, striking another large rock with a crunching impact. That one moved too. And suddenly, in the blink of an eye and with a mighty roar, an avalanche began sliding down the side of the mountain, straight toward the lone, luckless rider who found himself directly in the deadly, earth-shaking path of thousands of tons of rock and dirt. As Bo, Scratch, and Riley watched in horror, the man on horseback ahead of them jerked his mount in a tight circle, his head whipping back and forth. Bo knew the questions that had to be going through the man's mind. Can I outrun it? Which way should I go? He answered those questions by spurring his horse into a hard run back the way he had come toward the Texans and Jake Riley.
He'll never make it!
He's got a better chance coming this way than going straight ahead, but it's gonna be mighty close. That rock slide misses him. It's gonna be by a whisker.
Is there anything we can do to help him?
It's all up to him and his horse. Say a prayer for him if you like. That's about all we can do.
Well, we're well clear of it, aren't we?
It'll miss us by several hundred yards. We don't have to worry about being caught in it.
It was a terrible, awe-inspiring sight as it swept down the mountain, too powerful to be halted by anything any puny human could do. Dust billowed up in a huge cloud, obscuring the slope. Smaller rocks began to pelt down in the trail around the fleeing rider, who leaned far forward over his horse's neck and urged the animal on to its greatest speed.
Son of a gun, a thing maybe he's gonna make!
The lone rider might have escaped, just as Scratch said, if at that moment a rock the size of two doubled fists hadn't struck him in the head. It was only a glancing blow, but it was enough to knock the man out of the saddle. He pitched to the ground, rolling over and over as the now riderless horse raced on, caught up in a frantic, panic-stricken flight.
No! He was so close!
He's not giving up!
As the horse vaulted on past them, the man had scrambled to his feet and now ran desperately toward safety, his arms pumping and his legs flying back and forth. His valiant effort was doomed to fail, though. The edge of the rock slide caught him. A rock the size of a loaf of bread crunched into his side and knocked him off his feet, sending him sprawling in the trail. A large boulder rolled over the lower half of his body. His head and shoulders jerked up involuntarily, and his mouth opened wide in an agonized scream. More rocks crashed around him, and dust and dirt threatened to cover him up completely. No more than 2 minutes had passed since the first warning rumble. That was how little time it took for devastation to occur. That was how quick calamity could pass, too. Because as the rock slide reached the more level terrain west of the trail, it ground to a halt. Dust hung thickly in the air, billowing and swirling, as smaller rocks clattered down the slope in the wake of the avalanche.
Let's see if there's anything we can do for him. Yeah!
Bo heeled his horse into a run toward the man, with Scratch and Riley right behind him. A breeze began to disperse the dust clouds, carrying them away from the trail. Bo spotted the man lying half buried in the rubble that now covered the trail. He swung down from the dun while the horse was still moving and ran toward the man. When Bo reached the spot where the man had fallen, he began tossing rocks aside, trying to uncover him. Scratch and Riley dismounted and hurried to help. The man had a gash on his head, where the rock that had knocked him out of the saddle struck him, and blood from the injury covered the right side of his face. Despite that, Bo could tell that the man was fairly young, and the hair that hadn't been stained crimson was the color of straw. Somewhat surprisingly, the man was still alive. Scratch stopped working suddenly and reached over to touch Bo's arm. He nodded grimly toward the man's lower body. Bo's jaw tightened as he saw the damage that giant boulder had done when it rolled over the man. Everything from just above the waist on down was crushed almost flat. The luckless hombre's legs appeared to be broken in dozens of places, and there was no telling what had happened to his insides. He was still alive, but he was doomed.
Get that bottle from your saddlebag, Scratch. We'll try to make him comfortable. Maybe find out who he is. That's all we can do.
Bottle? You've got a bottle of whiskey and you didn't tell me?
Strictly for medicinal purposes.
I'll bet.
Bo got an arm under the man's head and shoulders and lifted him slightly while Scratch fetched the bottle. When he came back with it, Scratch knelt on the other side of the man and pulled the cork with his teeth, then put the neck of the bottle to the man's lips and tilted it up just enough to spill some of the liquor into his mouth. The man coughed and choked, but he swallowed most of the fiery whiskey. His eyelids fluttered for a few seconds, and then he opened his eyes as the liquor's bracing effects took hold.
What happened? You got caught in a rock slide, mister. But you're gonna be all right. Just lay there and rest for a few minutes before you try to get up and move around again.
Whiskey.
Scratch held the bottle to the man's lips again, but the man somehow found the strength to raise a hand and push it away.
Whiskey Flats. Gotta get to Whiskey Flats. Supposed to be there.
What the hell's Whiskey Flats?
Sounds like the name of a town. Don't reckon I've ever heard of it, though.
Take another drink, fella. It'll help you feel better.
Got to get there. Whiskey Flats.
He's determined, isn't he?
Scratch managed to get some more of the whiskey in the man's mouth. His throat worked convulsively as he swallowed.
I reckon I'll be all right now. Nothing hurts any.
I reckon we can start digging a grave now.
With what?
I got a shovel to folds up wrapped in my bedroll. Come on, Riley. You can lend a hand with the digging.
Riley didn't look too enthused about the idea, but he followed Scratch. The silver-haired Texan got the shovel from his gear and selected a nice pine-shaded site on the far side of the trail for the grave. He and Riley took turns digging, while Bo went through the dead man's clothing in search of something that might tell them who he was. The ground was hard and a little rocky, so it took time to scoop out a big enough hole. Riley was down inside the grave when Bo walked over carrying a piece of paper in one hand. He appeared to be clutching something else in his other hand, something small enough that it couldn't be seen as long as Bo's hand was closed.
Well, I found out who he was, and found out about Whiskey Flats, too.
Is this deep enough?
Yeah, that'll do fine.
He brushed himself off and frowned at the palms of his hands.
I'm gonna have blisters.
What's that, Bo?
It's a letter from the mayor of a settlement called Whiskey Flats. Must be somewhere south of here, since that's the direction the fellow was going. The letter is addressed to John Henry Braddock.
John, that name sounds familiar. Ain't he?
Bo held his other hand out to reveal the gold-plated star that lay in his palm.
A lawman. Making quite a name for himself as a town tamer, like Bill Hickok. I guess this is his badge.
Lawman, eh? Maybe I don't feel as sorry for him as I thought I did.
Yeah, well, I ain't over fond of star packers myself, but nobody deserves to go out like that hombre did. Just like a certain four-flush and swindling con man didn't deserve to be tarred and feathered and run out of town on a rail, I reckon.
Sorry.
This letter from Mayor Jonas McHale makes it clear that the town council of Whiskey Flats hired Braddock to come in and clean up the settlement. Doesn't say exactly what sort of trouble they're having there, but it must be something bad enough to need a tough, gun-handy marshal like Braddock to take care of it.
Yeah, well, reckon they'll have to find somebody else now.
Yeah, I reckon. Why don't you see if you can go catch Braddock's horse, Scratch? Well, I get one of our blankets and wrap up the body in it.
Sure thing. That cayuse was still going hell for leather when he went past us, but I bet he didn't run too far.
Scratch rode off on his bay in search of the lawman's horse, while Bo and Riley walked back to the edge of the debris from the avalanche where Braddock's body lay. Bo brought a blanket from his war bag with him, but he handed it to Riley, then knelt beside Braddock's body.
Hang on to this for a minute.
What are you doing there?
Bo straightened with the dead man's gun belt and holstered Colt in his hands. The gun had been lying under Braddock's hip when the boulder rolled over him, and it had escaped damage. Bo held out the gun belt and weapon toward Riley.
This looks like it would fit you. Might as well get some use out of it, since Braddock doesn't need it anymore.
I don't know. I told you I carried a pocket pistol. I've never used one of those big six-shooters.
Just take it. You never know when it might come in handy.
After a moment, Riley shrugged and took the gun belt. He strapped it around his waist and looked somewhat surprised as he buckled it in place.
Yeah, it fits all right.
I thought it would. Now let's spread that blanket on the ground and lift Braddock onto it.
Oh, that's going to be an ugly job. He's pretty busted up.
You'd want somebody to take care of you properly if it was you lying there and not him.
I suppose.
Riley looked away as much as possible as they lifted the gruesome remains of John Henry Braddock out of the rocks and onto the blanket. He seemed relieved when Bo rolled the blanket around the corpse and it was no longer visible. Just then, Scratch came trotting back on the bay, leading Braddock's horse by the reins. It was a good-looking buckskin, the sort of mount that a well-known lawman would ride. Riley looked at the horse with keen interest.
I'm carrying Braddock's colt. Do I get to claim his horse, too?
Might as well. That's what I had in mind.
Better than you having to ride double with one of us.
Scratch dismounted and tied the reins of Braddock's horse to a pine sapling. His bay and Bo's dun didn't have to be tied up. They knew not to stray very far from the Texans. Bo and Scratch took hold of Braddock's blanket-wrapped body, lifting it and carrying it over to the grave. They lowered it into the hole in the earth as gently and carefully as they could, then stepped back and removed their hats. Riley had ambled over after them. Scratch nudged him in the ribs with an elbow and nodded toward his hat. Riley rolled his eyes and took it off, holding it in front of him as Bo and Scratch held theirs. Bo and Scratch bowed their heads.
Lord, we ask that you show mercy on this man and welcome him into your kingdom. Grant him peace and rest from all the ills and troubles of this world, and let him dwell in your house forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.
You really think that does any good?
You know, there are some as don't believe in El Señor Dios, and I don't hold that against them, because every man's got to make up his mind about such things for his own self. But tell me this, what harm's it gonna do?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Here, take his shovel and get busy covering him up. Dirt'll go back in easier than it came out.
The rock slide completely blocked the trail and extended for 100 yards or so beyond it on the other side. That presented no problem for horsemen, who could easily ride around the rubble. But the trail would have to be cleared before wagon traffic could get through again. That wasn't the responsibility of Bo, Scratch, and Jake Riley. So after they finished refilling the final resting place of John Henry Braddock, they mounted up and rode on, still heading south. Riley was a decent rider, Bo noted, and handled Braddock's buckskin without much trouble. Bo had slipped the letter from the mayor of Whiskey Flats into the inside pocket of his coat, along with Braddock's badge. The badge itself didn't have any markings, so Bo assumed it could function as the symbol of authority, no matter whether its wearer was serving as marshal, sheriff, constable, or in some other law enforcement position.
How far do you think it is to this Whiskey Flats place?
I don't know. Scratch and I have been through this part of the territory before, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah, 30 years or more, I reckon. Back then, it was still part of Mexico. You remember that big ruckus we got into in that cantina in Santa Fe?
You could ask a similar question about nearly every place we've been.
Yeah, hell does have a habit of popping wherever we happen to be, don't it?
Well, I guess if we keep riding, we'll come to it sooner or later.
Hell or Whiskey Flats?
With a name like that, the way Mayor McHale talks about it in his letter, there may not be much difference.
It was almost midday by the time they left the scene of the avalanche behind, but they rode on for a while before stopping to eat a little and rest the horses. The meal consisted of cold biscuits and a little jerky from Scratch's saddlebags.
You know, you could break out that bottle again. A couple of swigs might make this food go down easier.
That's all right. You need a clear head, Jake, for what's coming next.
Oh? What's that?
Let's see how good you are at handling that Colt.
I told you, I've never used a gun like this very much.
Well, give it a try anyway. See that rock over there about 20 feet away?
The one sitting on top of the bigger rock.
That's right.
Riley squinted at the target Beau had chosen. A fist-sized rock resting on top of a stone about the size of a carpet bag.
Seems like it's sort of far away.
Just see if you can hit somewhere in the general vicinity.
All right. If you're sure.
Riley positioned himself with his right side toward the rocks and reached down to draw the gun. He pointed the Colt toward the sky and then extended his arm to its full length so that he could squint down the barrel toward the target.
Now hold on, you ain't fighting a duel with them rocks. Stand facing them.
Riley lowered the gun and turned so that he was squared up toward the rocks.
Like this?
Yeah. Holster that gun and draw it again.
Riley slid the weapon back into its sheath.
Shouldn't I have the holster tied down or something, or be wearing it lower?
Why, you want to impress some pretty girl with what a gunfighter you are? I don't see no pretty girls out here.
Just wear the holster normally, Jake. You don't want it too low or too high. It needs to be where you can catch hold of the gun naturally as your hand comes up in your draw.
All right.
Riley faced the rocks and drew the gun from its holster. The gun came out of leather smoothly enough. He didn't fumble it, but he still stuck his arm straight out and aimed along the barrel for a second before he pressed the trigger. The bullet struck the bigger rock a few inches below the target stone.
Not bad. You won't always have time to aim like that, though. See how you can shoot from the hip.
The key is keeping your eye on what you're shooting at. Learn how to do that and you'll hit what you're looking at more often than not.
Sort of like knowing what card is going to come out of the deck next, even when you haven't marked them.
Yeah, something like that.
Riley holstered the Colt, took his stance again, drew, and fired, snapping off the shot from his hip.
A clean miss.
Let me try again.
Go ahead.
The next time, Riley's bullet kicked up dirt a good 20 feet beyond the rocks.
Blast it!
He stubbornly holstered the revolver and set himself to try again. By the time he had emptied the Colt, only his first shot had hit anywhere near where it was supposed to. The others had all missed by considerable margins.
Son of a bitch! Nobody can hit anything shooting like that.
Is that so?
Beau had a pretty good idea what was coming next, so he wasn't surprised when Scratch's ivory-handled Remingtons seemed to leap into his hands. Scratch held the guns waist high and squeezed off round after round. The fist-sized rock leaped into the air, then split in two as another bullet struck it. And then those pieces shattered as well, as Scratch's slugs continued to find their targets unerringly. By the time Scratch's guns fell silent, the rock had turned into gravel, pattering down to the ground.
Son of a bitch, I never saw shooting like that.
Well, there are men who can do better, and that ain't false modesty, just fact. But I'll admit, I'm pretty fair at gun handling.
And at wasting ammunition by showing off. Load that Colt and try again, Jake. That's the only way you'll get any better.
What'll I shoot at? He busted that little rock all to pieces.
Just try for the big one.
Riley reloaded and continued to practice, and his last two shots from that cylinder both hit the target.
How about that?
Yeah, but that rock ain't shooting back.
You show some promise, Jake. Keep it up, you might bear a pretty good hand with a gun like that.
Don't know why I'd ever need to be. I'm just carrying it because Braddock doesn't have any use for it anymore. When we get to Whiskey Flats, I'll probably sell it. Might get enough to buy a smaller gun and have some left over to stake me in a game of cards.
Riley appeared to have forgotten what Beau had said about him getting a job in a store or a livery stable. That was all right, Beau mused, because he had something else in mind for Jake Riley now.